べもいばいしゃべちにぼかべもいばいしゃべちにぼはりはりかべもいばいしゃべちにぼばいしゃばたくらあぶらきとさだにどしゃなんだもえやバイシナバタクーラバイシナバタクーラあぶらきとさだにどしゃなんだKrishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare So we'll have a small discussion if anybody has any comments or anything about the last day or two. But first I'd like to say a few things about this song and then we'll say a few words of review for the last couple of days and then we can discuss something. So this song is from Thakur Bhaktivinoda's Kalyana Kalpa Taru. He composed this while he was living in where he was the first high school teacher, not in Choti, but in Bhadrak, when he was living in Bhadrak, Orissa. So this is his first songbook, Kalyana Kalpa Taru. And this song is very important. It's very appropriate for our discussion today. He's singing Kavi Mui Vaishnava Chini Bo Hari Hari. It's a prayer to Krishna. That first point is very significant. He's praying, my dear Lord Krishna, O Krishna, Krishna, Hari, Hari. When will that day come? Kabi Mui. Vaishnavi Chinibo. When I can understand, when I can appreciate, when I can recognize the Vaishnavas. It's a very important prayer. Very important, as we'll discuss in many different ways. First of all, we can understand by this prayer, he's indicating he can't see them. Many times we're thinking we can. But he's teaching us in his first point that we should not think that we can see the Vaishnava. We should depend on Krishna for seeing the Vaishnava. Vaishnava charana kalyanera kani moti bohridaya dori. Then what will I do? When I see that Vaishnava, I will take his lotus feet and I'll hold them very close to my chest. This has different meanings. It can mean literally taking the lotus feet of the Vaishnava and placing them on her chest. It can mean taking the dust of the Vaishnava and putting them on her chest. It can also mean, our chest means that hidden place. One of the synonyms for our heart is, what's the word, for cave. Something hidden. In Sanskrit, the word heart also has a synonym for cave, or some hidden place. So, another meaning of this is that we want to take the instructions of the Vaishnavas, and we want to keep them very close to our heart, very close to us, meaning we always remember them, and also meaning that we don't flaunt them. It's in a hidden place. We don't just show off that I've gotten this instruction and I'm a big Vaishnava. We want to keep it a private thing. Vaishnava Thakura Aprakrita Sada Nidosha Anandamoya. Why is this? Because the Vaishnava, he's our Thakur. He's our worshipable deity. And aprakrita siddha, he's completely non-material. Don't think that a Vaishnava has a material body. Nirdosha, he has no faults. Anandamoya, he's full of blissfulness, ecstatic happiness. He's Krishna Nami Priti. He always has so much affection, so much love for the holy names. Jodi Udasina, he's completely aloof, indifferent from matter. Jivete Dayadra Hoya, he's full of mercy for the fallen conditioned souls. Abhimanahina, he has no abhiman, he has no false pride, he has no upadi, thinking himself like this and that, only he's thinking I'm a servant of my guru in Krishna. Abhimanahina, Bhajane Prabhina, he's very expert in bhajan. And what does it mean to be expert in bhajan? Does it mean that he can play 20 different ragas? He knows how to play the harmonium and the mridanga. He's very expert with kartals. He can do like this. No. Bhajana Prabina means that he's expert in avoiding the 10 offenses to the holy name, and that he's very expert in relishing the holy names. He knows what's appropriate to meditate upon at what time. That's a very high thing. And he knows how to please Krishna and Guru by singing appropriate songs. Just like Swarup Damodara Goswami, he's Bhajana Prabina. He's very, very expert. Mahaprabhu, when he was going into ecstasy, different times, Swarup Damodara Goswami knew exactly what to sing at the exact proper moment, exact time. That's Bhajana Prabina. Bishayiti Anasakta. He's always unattached to sense pleasures. Antara Bahira Nishkapata Sada. Very, very nice. Both inside and outside, there's no kapatya, Nishkapata Sada. There's no duplicity in him. He's very, very simple. Nitya Lila Anurakta. He's very, very attached. Anurakta, always attached to Krishna's eternal pastimes. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he says that we should know a very important thing. Kanishta Madhyama Uttama Prabedi. There's some difference, Prabedi, between the Kanishta, the Madhyama, and the Uttam Vaishnavas. Vaishnava Tribhidigani. I'm going to consider this thing. There's three types of Vaishnavas. And I'll deal with them accordingly in a proper way. Kanishte Adara. I'll offer respect to the Kanishta. Madhyame Pranati. But with the Madhyamadikari, even more, I'll offer my obeisances. Uttame Shushrusa Suni. And the Uttam Vaishnava, Shushrusa Suni, I'll be very, very eager to go and hear from that Uttam Vaishnava. Jejana Vaishnava, Chini Aloya, Adara Koriba Jabe. Vaishnavera Kripa Jahi Sarva Siddhi, Abhasya Pai Vaitabe. If I offer proper respect to them according to their positions, then I'll get their mercy, Vaishnavera Kripa. And getting their mercy, Jahi Sarva Siddhi Abhasya Pai Vaitabe, I'll get all perfection. Vaishnava Charitra Sarvada Pavitra. The Vaishnava's character is always pure, Sarvada Pavitra. Jay Ninde Hingsa Kori. This Ninda is hingsa. It's a kind of violence. If you criticize the Vaishnava, you're doing a kind of violence. You're doing the most grievous violence. You may be doing some violence to that Vaishnava, but you may say, but that Vaishnava, he's a mani na manadena. He's trinada pisanichena. He doesn't mind. No problem. He doesn't take offense to that. There's no violence. He didn't mind that thing. But you're doing violence to yourself. And you're doing violence to the society. Because when we act in this way, in a very, very bold, proud way, to be so bold and so proud is to criticize the Lord's devotees. And that way we're encouraging. We're setting an example that other people may also follow us. And moreover, we're not just doing violence to the Vaishnavas who see that thing, but we're doing violence to the non-devotees, encouraging them that they shouldn't criticize the Vaishnava. We're doing violence to Mother Earth and all the living entities on the earth. Because the Vaishnavas, they're Krishna Kripa Srimurti. They're the embodiment, they're the vehicle by which Krishna gives His mercy. And if we criticize them, everyone feels some pain by that. So Bhaktivinoda, he sings that Bhaktivinoda na sambhasitari taki sadamona bhoi. He stays always silent. What does that mean? He's writing this in his songbook. Kalina Kalpataru. You write a songbook, a book of songs, and you say, I'm always staying silent. It seems like a great dichotomy, a great contradiction. It's not a contradiction. It's described that monam balitva murkashya. That mona is the strength of the foolish people. Someone's a fool, then better you stay quiet. Don't say anything. Because if you open your mouth, and immediately everyone will recognize what character you have. If we speak something, we should only speak that thing which has some value. If someone asks us to speak and they give us some respect, then maybe we should speak on the request of the Vaishnavas. But if we don't have anything to say, if it's a subject matter that we're not familiar with, why should we speak? No, it's not necessary. I don't know what to say about this subject matter. Bhaktivinoda is saying, Take sada monabdhari. I'll always be silent. It means that many times in the assembly of persons, there's some criticism. That's the nature when people come together. You know, oh, did you hear? You know, this temple president, he's doing this thing. Oh, and this person, they left their wife and now they're going with this other girl. Very, very bad. And they're speaking all kind of bad things like that. But Thakur Bhaktivinoda is saying, I'll be silent. Srila Raghunath Das Goswami, when people, they started to say something bad about a Vaishnava, he would look at his watch. He didn't have a wristwatch, but he would do something like that. And he would say, oh, you know, I have something to do. I have to go. You please excuse me. He wouldn't quarrel with them even. He wouldn't even try to correct them. But he would just beg excuse from that assembly and go somewhere else. This is in the same modaki, sada monadori, that I'll always be quiet. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada, he describes that the nature of a Vaishnava is that he's adosha darshi. Nature of the pundit is that he's sarvadosha darshi. He sees all the faults. He sees everybody's fault because he's a pundit and he knows so many things. But the Vaishnava, he thinks that I don't know anything. And he's adosha darshi with others. But he's sarvadosha darshi with himself. He sees all of his own faults and he's always criticizing himself. If we can act like this, our acharyas have described, this is very, very wonderful for our bhajan. And we'll very quickly make advancement. If we're always searching out the faults in ourself, always seeing any slight little fault in ourself and focusing on it, and trying to purify that thing, trying to drive that thing out. And then with other people, we overlook any faults. We don't see any faults in any of us. We only see faults in ourself. If we do like that, then everything will be auspicious for us. So the last few days, we've given some general overview. The first day, we spoke something about some general principles of respect. Thakur Bhaktivinoda, he's described in Chaitanya Sikshamrita at the end of the second shower, part two. He says that proper respect should be given considering the person's status. This is called maryada. Not giving proper respect is considered a great fault. One should give respect to all human beings, but one should give more respect to a man with position. Most respect should be given to a devotee. And he describes the following order of respect. Naramatra maryada, respect to the human beings. Sabhyatara maryada, respect to persons who are civilized. Raja maryada, respect to people who have position. Vidya maryada, respect to persons who are educated, the pandits, persons like that. Sadguna maryada, respect to persons who have good qualities, especially the Brahmins, Sannyasis, and Vaishnavas. Varna maryada, respect according to one's varna. Ashram maryada, according to one's ashram, meaning especially the Sannyasis. And last and final is bhakti maryada, offering respect to the devotees. So then yesterday we spent most of the day discussing about respect, a little bit to the Brijbasis and Dambasis, respect to the Brahmins, and respect to the Vaishnavas. And who is really a Brahmin? And what is the connection? What is the... how do we see a Vaishnava in connection with a Brahmin? We respect a Vaishnava much more than we do a Brahmin. So, Prabhuji, you had some question yesterday?
Concerning respect, for me it's most difficult to respect persons who are like close related to me, as my wife or my brother or friends or devotees who I'm associating a lot of time. Respect level goes down. So I tend to become more furious or more agitated quickly as with other people, which I don't know so much. So my question is, how can I improve this, that I can respect equally the close persons to me? As
he asked us this after class yesterday. Such a nice question. I'm very happy to hear this thing. It's a very amazing sociological phenomenon that people in general, not just devotees, but non-devotees also, they tend to be more respectful to people who aren't close with them. And people who are close with them, their wives, their husbands, their children, their parents, they're disrespectful to very often. So your question is, how can we rectify that? First question we might ask is, why does that happen? This is because of upadis, and because we have this conception that these people belong to us. And they belong to us according to this upadi, in this little box that we have. This is my wife, and I own her. And she has to behave like this, and she has to be submissive like this, and she should do everything the way that I want it. Or this is my child, and he has to do everything the way I want. These are my parents, and my parents should behave like parents. They shouldn't have any individual life. They should just dote on me and take care of me. And when these personalities don't behave the way that we want, then we become angry with them. And that anger and that resulting violence, either gross or subtle, is a source of great disturbance in those persons' lives, in the lives of society, and also in our own personal life. It's a very sad thing, because these are people who are close with us. And not just these physical relationships, but also sometimes guru and disciple, sometimes student and teacher, sometimes between friends. We tend to be disrespectful to those people. And that in and of itself is a statement. If we find ourselves in that situation, we can understand something about the quality of our life. It's not a very good thing, because these are the people who are supposed to be the closest to us. These are the people that are supposed to be very intimate. These are people that are supposed to understand us, that we reveal our mind to, that we take help from. But if we're behaving with them in a very, very bad way, and sometimes we see that we use words, we use harsh language with people in these categories that we would never use with a stranger or with an acquaintance. So this is a very, very bad thing. It's a very sad thing. So first and foremost, as you are being, it's a very noble question, we should be conscious about it. Prabhupada used to say that before we can be Krishna conscious, we should become conscious. Before we can be Krishna conscious. So when people are behaving like this, it means that they're unconscious. And why does this kind of thing happen? It happens, one, because we're putting these upadis upon people and we're demanding something from them for our own personal sense gratification. And another reason is, as said in English, that familiarity breeds contempt. When we're too close with a person, it becomes very dangerous. It's very dangerous for a disciple to travel intimately with a guru. You see, Srila Prabhupada used to rotate his secretaries and servants, and a few persons who were very, very good and kept some proper respect, Prabhupada allowed them to continue that way. And we've seen other Vaishnavas doing a similar thing, because sometimes those Vaishnavas who are serving their guru, even serving their guru, they become familiar and they start thinking, oh, he's just an ordinary person. I become tired and I sleep. He becomes tired and he sleeps. I pass stool, he passes stool. I eat, he eats. What's the difference between he and I? And sometimes even someone they may have acquired some knowledge, some education, or some wealth, or some type of material opulence. And it might even exceed that opulence of their gurus. They may have more money than their guru. They may have a better education than their guru. They may have more physical beauty than their guru. And they might start considering themselves superior to their guru for any of these reasons. So, familiarity breeds contempt. One solution to this is to keep some distance. It's said in the Mahabharata. We're not trying to offer any marriage advice. Don't mind this. This is just a shastric point. And we're not suggesting anyone necessarily does this, but it illustrates the point we're making right now. That if one's wife becomes critical and starts complaining always and causing trouble, then the man should go away for a month. And he should leave her protected with her family, with her father or parents or something like that. But he should leave her for a month. And then in that separation, as it's saying is in English, that in separation the heart grows fonder. So, therefore, it's described even in the pastimes of Radha Krishna that prema is like the flow of a river. And a river has two embankments, the embankment of union, sambhog, and the embankment of separation, vipralamba. And if these two embankments weren't there, then the flow of that prema wouldn't continue. If there were always union, our acharyas are describing, that love would dissolve. But because there's union and separation, it keeps some balance there. So I would imagine there are many answers to your question. I would suspect that you probably have some answers yourself. A very good question. Obviously, one thing that we should do is we should be careful of how we speak. A wise person is thoughtful before he opens his mouth. He tries to think, what am I about to say? And this is something we see that comes with age, generally, isn't it, Marge? People, when they're very, very young, when they're very enthusiastic, and the nature of a young person is they always want to make a revolution, they want to change the world. And sometimes they think, all you old fogies, you don't want to change the world. But actually, they don't know. Many times the old fogies, they also want to change the world, but they realize that the way to do it is not to open your mouth and jump up and down and make a big noise about it. When you do that, many times people just become angry with you and you get put down, you get pushed away, you get chastised, and nothing good comes about from that. So we should be careful and cautious. We should think about, who is this person? What is my relationship with them? This person that I call my wife, like she belongs to me, she actually doesn't belong to me. We should see that she's Krishna Dasi. And therefore, as we comment sometimes, Srila Gaura Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, he instructed one disciple who came to him and said, oh, Gaura Maharaj, I want to introduce you to my wife. I just got married. And Gaura Kishore is a very heavy personality. He said, oh, very nice. He said, now that you're married, he said, I want to give you some instruction. He said, don't think that she belongs to you. You should see her as Krishna Dasi, and you should worship her. You should offer your obeisances to her every day. There's a story we heard once in Braj. I don't remember the names, I'm sorry. About one great Vaishnava who's, he was in his 20s or 30s and he became eligible to get old enough to be married. And his parents, they arranged for a nice wife. And as common very often in Vedic culture, he never met that girl until their wedding ceremony. There was some astrological readings done, and there was some discussion between the two families about the qualities of the children, and very great care. They chose a husband and wife for each other. But he never met this lady until their marriage. And then in the marriage ceremony, he's looking at her, and he's thinking, she looks familiar. I've seen her before, something. So then later, when they had some private time, the first alone, he told her, he said, you know, you look familiar. I think I've seen you somewhere before. And she said, oh, maybe when I was a little girl, there was one drama, and I was playing Radharani in that drama. Maybe you saw that drama. And then immediately when he heard that, he went, yes, yes, I remember seeing that. So at that point, he took a vow, I'll never touch you. And he worshipped her. He said, for me, you're my Ishtadev, you're my worshipable deity, you're Radharani. She was playing Radharani in that play. And she was crying, no, 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 don't do this to me. No, 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 I can't. And he wouldn't touch her. They never consummated their marriage. He would wash her cloth. He would cook for her. He was worshipping her like Radharani. Now, that may not be very practical or desirable for a lot of marriages. And in general, we can see that if someone were to try to behave like that, it would be artificial even, both for the husband and for the wife, although the ladies might like it very much for some time. But after a short time, I think it would be very painful for some of them also. And it wouldn't be natural. It wouldn't be good, because we should act according to our adhikar. We should act according to our particular situation. That person had a very high adhikar. His wife was not very happy with that, no doubt. But he did like that in his whole life. And so he never ever touched her. He just worshipped her. So Gaura Kishore, he said like that, you should see that she's Krishna Dasi. And don't think she belongs to you. Don't think that she's there for your sense gratification. You should offer her obeisances every day when you get up. That was his instruction to him. And you should take her remnants of her foodstuff. You know, in the Vivaha Jagya, the wedding ceremony, there's many different stages, many different ceremonies within that larger ceremony. One of which is that after the husband and wife are married for, I don't know, I think 3 days generally in Orissa, is that correct? For 3 days, the wife simply eats the uchista. Is that right? 3 days?
4 days.
For 4 days in Orissa anyway, it's different in different places. The lady, she'll only take the remnants of her husband. A very humbling position. And that's a general, a common practice in all over India. But Guru Kishore's Babaji is telling him that you should take the remnants of your wife. It doesn't necessarily mean, I would think, that it means that always he should do that every day, something, but maybe once a day or sometimes you should do that out of respect. And sometimes we've seen in small villages in Bengal and Orissa, sometimes the man and the woman in the morning, they're going, they're offering obeisances to each other. This is some etiquette. So to answer your question, is the subject matter of books like Manu Samhita and our Smriti Shastras, Vishnu Smriti and others, which describe the behavior of a younger brother and an older brother, the behavior, how an older brother should treat the younger brother, how the younger brother should treat the older brother, how you should treat your parents, how you should treat your wife, how you should treat your husband. These things are given. And for the smartas and for the followers of Anashram Dharma, these things are very, very important. We're not trying to emphasize these kinds of things in this seminar because our understanding of the teachings of our acharyas is that if we simply chant the holy name, then very naturally this Trinadapi Sunichino Bhav will come. And from that, all types of proper etiquette will come in a very natural way. Ultimately, this is the purpose of these talks, is to emphasize the chanting of the holy name, which we'll come to in another day or two. And along the way, we're describing some different reasons why and how we can be respectful to others. There's unlimited different examples that we can give of these things. There's no limit. You could go on and on and on forever about them. And I don't think it would necessarily help everyone to go over and focus upon each and every example. But I'm hoping that all of you will get some understanding of the general principle that it's possible to actually offer respect to everyone. There's scientific, shastric reasons why we can find reasons to offer respect to everyone, and that we should look for those things. And that's a cultured person, not just that you be respectful just because you want someone to like you. As we've said several times, some people, they go on, "Oh, Prabhu, please accept my obeisances." And we try to act very humble with someone because we want them to respect us. We want them to like us. So in general, these things are given in the Smriti literatures and Manu Samhita and other places. And in a simplified way, we can say that there's a hierarchy. And if we observe that hierarchy, then it helps these type of relationships. There's a type of formal respect. There's a type of formal respect that we give when we're speaking on Srimad Bhagavatam. We're giving this talk. Maharaj is sitting here. This is a very, very bad thing. In one sense, a very terrible thing. Maharaj is senior to me in every way. How am I sitting up here? I'm doing this, not just out of pride, although no doubt it's also there, but because this is our proper system. This is our system our acharyas are given, and not that I'm being respected, but we want to offer respect to the words of Srila Vyasadeva, to the words of our acharyas. And if we're sitting here, then we're representing them. Just like the pujari, he may be doing artik to Radhasham Sundar, and his Guru Maharaj may be standing down below him. He's standing up above. He's standing on a higher platform. Not because the disciple's higher than his Guru, but because he's worshipping Radha Krishna. And out of respect to that position, that thing is going on. So there's a hierarchy. There's some formal systems of respect. And if we observe these things, sometimes it may seem like a burden. It may seem rather artificial. It shouldn't be artificial. Don't make it artificial. It's artificial if we make it that way. Sometimes the devotees, they say, "Oh, why should we call everybody Prabhu? It's just an artificial thing. You don't really mean it. And it's a sad fact. There's so many people, they just say, hey, Prabhu, Prabhu, hey, Prabhu, come here. Or Mataji, Mataji, Mataji. Like this. But Prabhu means something. It means we're saying, you're my master. Mataji means you're my mother. You're my worshipful mother. They're not light, cheap things. Huh? So is it saying in English, don't throw out the baby with the bathwater? You give the baby a bath and the water's dirty, so you're going to throw the water out. So the baby's still in the tub, so you throw the tub along with the baby because the water's dirty, so we'll get rid of the water like that. So the tendency is there sometimes when people misuse these social etiquettes that they want to throw out the baby with the bathwater. They want to just do away with them altogether. Because in our society, we're very much a male-dominated society. And because many of the males in our society, maybe most of them, we haven't done a survey, but maybe most of them, are conditioned souls, and they're in a controlling kind of mode, they've sometimes abused, or maybe very often abused, that position and tried to push the ladies down. And we see in our society sometimes they push the children down, the gurukulis. We push down the grihastas, we push down the brahmacharis. We abuse people in different ways. And then we think, oh, this is very bad. The solution is that we should just get rid of this etiquette and the ladies should just be treated the same way as the men. They can share the same bathrooms and wear the same dress. The men can wear makeup and the ladies can do weightlifting. And we should have equal respect for the children that we do for the adults. And we'll hear a Bhagavatam class from a 5-year-old child. And if he has some marital problems, you need to have some personal advice. Then you can go to the 5-year-old and you can ask his advice what to do with your life. Should you get married? Should you take sannyas? You can ask that 5-year-old child. Obviously, it's absurd. These social respects are there for our benefit. And ultimately, these respects, they involve a kind of aishvarya, a kind of awe and reverence, if we think about it. That the wife, sometimes it says in Vedic Shastra, there's three types of wives, Madhyam, Uttam, Kanishtha. And the best type of wife, she serves her husband just out of spontaneous love. The second class type of wife, she serves her husband because she's afraid that people are going to criticize her. And she's chased her husband, and for that, out of fear. And the third class, the worst type of wife, she's married, but she cheats on her husband, and she's thinking about other different men like that. So the second class wife, she's faithful to her husband out of fear. It's described like this in Mahabharata and different literatures. It's not a very high class thing, but that motivation is good. That motivation of fear, that awe and reverence, gives some distance between the worshipper and the worshipped. Gives some distance between the deity and the devotee. Gives some distance between a superior and an inferior person, according to social respects. If we have some fear that, I'm afraid of Maharaj. If I do something wrong, he may curse me, or I may do some Vaishnava aparad, then I'll be finished. That fear actually is healthy. I'll keep some distance from him. It'll cause me to have some respect. In a similar way, in Vedic culture, we see this in Orissa, we see this in Bengal in the villages. There's some respect between the younger brother and the elder brother. That younger brother, that younger sibling, they treat the elder brother like guru, like their god, like they're their mother or father. They give them so much respect, isn't it? The younger sister, she treats her older brother just practically like he's the same as her father. So, in the same way, if we study, we'll find some types of respects and types of awe and reverence in all these types of relationships. There's a hierarchy. And although it may seem unpalatable sometimes, we shouldn't just throw it out because these things are misused. It's a natural thing. It's natural for the wife to be respectful and take a subordinate position to the husband. And if she does that, she captures the heart of the husband. And then maybe she wants to control the husband. That's very common these days. But the best way to do that is just she's very, very loving and affectionate. Then that husband becomes controlled by the love of the wife. And that lady is a very first class, high class lady. And everybody in culture and society respects her because she's doing like that. They give her more respect than the woman who's taking a stick and beating her husband. And telling, you do this, why are you late? Nonsense, rascal. But she has a bigger position, it might seem like. She's controlling her husband. But she gets less respect. Nobody cares for such a lady. But that lady who's taking a very subordinate position, yes, Prabhu, no Prabhu. Just like there's a story in the Nrisimha Purana. It's actually a good story to tell in this lecture, in this seminar. We can tell the whole story. There was once a brahmachari whose father did all the different sangskars for him. And he was a very, very powerful person because of the sangskars. One day he was sitting on the bank of a river and he was meditating. He'd just taken bath and hung up his cloth. He was sitting in his kopan and his outer cloth was sitting above him in the tree, drying. And suddenly two birds came and they picked up his cloth and they started flying away with it. And he became very angry. Huh! And he got up and he pulled out his Brahmin thread. Huh! And and he cursed those two birds. Huh? And those two birds suddenly fell down dead, burned to ashes. And that brahmachari said, yes, I'm a very powerful person. What person is there like me? So then his cloth dried after some time. He put that cloth on and he went into town. And he went, every day he would go and beg alms. So he begged on one door. The lady came to the door. And he said, Bo Mata, Bhagavata Bhiksham Dehi. He's begging some alms from her. And that lady said, oh yes, yes. She's a very pious lady. Let me get something for you. He's a brahmachari, he's a religious person. So she went to get something for him. Just at that moment, her husband returned home. And that lady, she'd taken a vow. For her, she had no other deity. For her, her husband was her deity. And she worshipped her husband. Uh-huh. She wasn't worshipping Radha Krishna. She wasn't worshipping Hanuman or Durga Devi or any other deity, Lakshmi. She was just worshipping her husband. Uh-huh. Actually, it's said in Vedic literature that a lady, ideally, she shouldn't even perform any vratas, she shouldn't do any worship without the permission of her husband. And it's described that for a lady, there's no other guru, no other guru, not even the sannyasis, no one else other than her husband. Chanakya Pandit describes like this. So for this lady, that was her deity, her husband. Suddenly her husband came home, just in the middle, she was supposed to give something to this brahmachari. Oh, my pati, my prabhu has come. So he's very tired, he's come so long. So she washed his feet. Have her husband, she massaged his feet and his legs, and then she brought him some prasadam, and she spoke some sweet words. Are you okay? Is everything? Did you have a nice day? I'm so happy to see you. Like this, she was worshiping him like that, giving him some sweet words. And that brahmachari is standing outside. What's going on? So long. What's this nonsense, woman? Doesn't she know who I am? I'm a brahmachari. I'm very powerful. I burn these two birds to ashes. Nonsense, woman. So he's getting very angry. Finally, after 20, 30 minutes went by, she knew, this brahmachari is outside. Oh, I have to go and serve him. Atithi seva. So she went out there and she offered some grains and things to him. And that brahmachari was standing there, and glaring at her in a very heavy way, like this. Huh? In the same way that he glared at those two birds and burned them to ashes. And that Mataji, she looked at him and she said, look, don't look at me like that. Don't think that I'm like those two birds that you killed. Huh? I'm a chaste housewife and you can't do that thing to me. Now you can either take this rice and dal, or you can just go on your way, as you like. And that brahmachari, he was very surprised. No one was there on the bank of the river. How did she know this thing? Huh? She's just a housewife. He's a very powerful brahmachari. Who is she? Who is he? So he said, became a little humble at that point. He said, how did you know about these birds? Huh? She said, because of my service to my husband, I have the power of Trikalagya. I know past, present, and future because I've served my husband so nicely. And I know that you hurt these birds unnecessarily. She said, you think that you're such a powerful brahmachari. Huh? And because of your brahmacharya, you have this shakti. He said, but actually, she told him that all these powers that you have, these are because your father, he performed all these sangskaras for you in your childhood. But you've done a very bad thing. Because when your father passed away, you left your mother with no one to take care of her. And you thought, yes, I'm a big brahmachari. I'm a very good spiritual person. I'm a big devotee. And you went out, sitting on the bank of the river and going to different sacred places and chanting your mantras and thinking yourself very big. And meanwhile, your poor mother, she was having to go door to door to beg for food. She had nothing. You've done a very, very sinful thing. First, by offending your mother. And second, by killing these two innocent birds. And third, by coming and glaring at me like that. I have not done anything wrong. My husband is my deity. And he's more worshipful for me than anyone. So that Brahmacharya became, oh, I'm very sorry, Mataji. He said, please, I can see actually you're a very powerful personality. Would you please give me some instruction? What should I do for my own, to benefit myself? And she told him then, she said, if you want to get benefit, you should go back to your village and you should take care of your mother. Because you're not acting according to your adhikar. Everyone should act according to their adhikar, according to their position. Krishna, he declares to Uddhava in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam. Tavat karmani kurvita nakur na nirvidyeta yavata matkata shavanado va shadha yavana jayate. As long as someone's not detached from fruitive work and material enjoyment, and as long as they don't have deep faith in Krishna, their faith is komala shraddha, or weak faith, then they should follow the systems of anashram dharma. They have to do that. So she told him, you think that you're a big spiritual personality, but actually you're just doing some external rituals in that. You should go home, you should take care of your mother, and you should marry. She said, soon there'll be some marriage offer from a nearby village, and you should accept that lady. You should marry, you'll have several children. And then later on in your life, when you've become fully purified by worshipping Krishna, then you should leave home and you should take sannyas. So he did like that. The story is there in the Nishina Purana. So many different rules and regulations are there. So many different formal systems of respect are there. And all these formal systems give some distance between the superior and the inferior. That distance is helpful. It's helpful in some ways to keep some distance between the husband and the wife and to respect her and to let her do her service and you do your service. It's helpful to keep some distance between those persons who have a social relationship with us of being inferior. We should give them some blessing, but we shouldn't come too close with them. We can accept their service on some extent. If they're actually a subordinate in some way, maybe they're a student in a Gurukula, whatever, we should accept that thing. And that's beneficial for them. And it's beneficial for us. We become more sober in that way. We think, oh, this person, he's giving me some service, he's doing like this. I have to behave in a proper way. A very serious thing. So we can do like that. And we should try, in general, I would just suggest that we should try to keep some distance. A respectful distance. Therefore, we see in Vedic culture, the husband and the wife, they're not walking hand in hand everywhere. You don't see boys and girls walking with their arm around each other in India. Sometimes in Delhi or Mumbai or something you do. But you'll never see like that in the small villages. They keep some distance. And even many times it's very, very common for the boy, maybe he's going and working in the city or in another village, and he may not even see his wife for weeks or even months at a time. But he very strictly protects her, leaving her with the parents or in-laws or whatever. She's very well protected, but there's some distance between them. In Vedic culture, very often the man and the woman, they stay in separate rooms. And in a similar way, a relationship with the older brother and the younger brother, there's some distance. There's also some familiarity, there's some love and affection. But this respect is there. And if we keep this respect, it keeps our relationships healthy. Because otherwise, as we're saying, familiarity breeds contempt. So sometimes to maintain our relationship, it's healthy for it to keep a little bit of distance like that. That was a very long answer. Is that okay? Is there any other comments or thoughts about yesterday or today? Yeah. So, my gosh, we have a big ocean before us. Some kashaya.
Some.
It's not a Sanskrit word. It's some. S-O-M-E. Some. So, yesterday we spoke something about the Vaishnavas. In the first day we spoke about the Asura system of respect, which is based upon artha and kama, on greed and lust, and how the Vanashram system is superior to that. So the Vaishnava system is superior yet to that. It's described in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Krishna Bhakta Niskama Atayiva Shanta Bhukti Mukti Siddhikami Sakaliya Shanta. That the Krishna Bhakta, he's Niskama. He doesn't want anything. He's fully satisfied. Atayiva Shanta. He's very peaceful. But Bhukti Mukti Siddhikami Sakaliya Shanta. All these other people who are wanting material enjoyment, liberation, and mystic perfections, lusty desires, all these people are always disturbed. So in a society that worships the Vaishnavas, there's naturally some hope to have peace in the society. Everyone today in this world wants peace. It seems like this world today is on the brink of a third world war. Everyone is fighting and there's so much, especially between the Muslims and the Christian world, and so much. But what is the hope? We have no system for any hope of peace. But if we have a social system of respect like this, we worship the devotees, those persons who are really niskam, devotees who really don't have any material desires, then that person who's already santa, a devotee, he's peaceful. The society will also become more peaceful because the goal of that society is not material. It's not some mundane thing like that. It's described about Yudhisthira Maharaj in the fourth canto, the first canto, chapter 12, text 6 of the Bhagavatam. Kim te kama suraspara mukunda manaso dvijaha adi jahur mudam ragya kshuditasya hitetare. Yudhisthira Maharaj, he had so much wealth that even the devatas and the heavenly planets, they were envious. They were wishing they had wealth like Yudhisthira Maharaj. But it's described that for Yudhisthira Maharaj, he didn't care anything about it because nothing satisfied him except for the Lord's service. It's described once that Krishna, he was pleased with Yudhisthira. And Krishna told Yudhisthira, I want to give you a benediction. What would you like? And Yudhisthira said, yes, my Lord. There's not just one thing, but there's three things I would like if you would give me. And Krishna said, yes, what do you like? You're my very dear devotee. You tell me, what is it you want? And Yudhisthira said, well, I'd like to be the richest man in the whole world. That's the first thing. Krishna was a little surprised. He said, okay, so but you can be the richest man in the whole world. What else would you like? I would like to have the most powerful kingdom. I'd like to be the most powerful person in the whole world. That's the second thing. Krishna said, okay, you can have that also. What else would you like? I would like to marry the most beautiful girl in all the three worlds. Krishna said, tatastu, so be it. And so he married Draupadi. She was Miss World or Miss America. They have all these beauty contests. So at that time, in Dwarpar Yuga, Draupadi, she was Miss Universe. She was the most beautiful lady in the whole universe. It's described she's a partial expansion of Lakshmi Devi. So Krishna gave those three benedictions to Yudhisthira. And then Krishna, of course, Krishna Sarvagya, he knows everything. But for the sake of his pastime, Krishna acted like he was mugda, like he was bewildered. He said, Yudhisthira, I don't understand. These are my devotees. They're always praying, Nadanam, Najanam, Nasundaram, Kavitam, Vajagadisha, Kami, Mama Janmani, Janmani, Shri, Bhavatad, Bhakti, Rohitakitva. I don't want wealth, I don't want followers, I don't want position. But you're asking for these three things. Yeah, this doesn't make any sense. My devotees never ask like this. Yudhisthira said, yes, I know. There's a very good reason I'm asking for this. Because everyone is afraid to worship you. Everyone knows the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam. Narad Muni says, Yashyaham managrinami harishetad danam shanai. Narad Muni told this to Yudhisthira, that if you're really a good devotee, If Krishna really likes you, what does he do? He takes everything away. He makes you into a pauper. Huh? There's a very nice song Vaishnavas sometimes sing about this time of year called Chorgagana Purushastakam. We won't go in that direction. There's no time today. But Krishna, he's a thief. He steals everything. So people are afraid to worship you. Everyone, they want to worship Lakshmi, they want to worship Lord Shiva. You worship Shivji, you get a nice wife. You worship Durga, the ladies worship Shiva, they get a nice husband. The men, they worship Durga, they get a nice wife. Huh? You worship Lakshmi, you get some money. But you worship Krishna, and you get broke. You lose everything. You become a mendicant. All your friends leave you, nobody cares about you. Right? When we come to this movement, like we all had so many friends probably before we came. Maybe you're the most popular person in school. And then you decide, I'm going to become a Hare Krishna devotee. And then you went back to see your friends. Hey, Bob, guess what? I shaved my head. No, I'm a Hare Krishna devotee. All of a sudden you find you're very unpopular. Nobody likes you anymore. This is what happens when you worship Krishna. So Yudhishthira said, I know that everyone's afraid to worship you like that. So for this reason, I'm asking for these boons. I want to show that someone can be your devotee and be very wealthy. Can be your devotee and be very powerful. Can be your devotee and have a very beautiful wife. But Yudhishthira is described here. Kim te kama surasparha mukunda manaso dvija arijadur mudam ragya churita shagitetare. The opulence of Yudhishthira Maharaj was so great that even the devatas were envious. They wanted that. They were enchanted. They were bewildered by it. But Yudhishthira Maharaj didn't care for it at all. He accepted it only for the service of Krishna. So in a social system of respect, where we keep the Vaishnavas on the top, and those Vaishnavas are qualified persons like Yudhishthira Maharaj, then everybody becomes peaceful in the society. Everyone offers respect to these good qualities. So it's very important that we offer proper respect to the Vaishnavas. It's described that bhakti stu bhagavad bhakta sangena parijayate. We want bhakti, but how do we get bhakti? We get bhakti through the bhakta. Bhaktya sanjayate bhaktya. It's described by Krishna Uddhava in 11th canto. Bhakti comes from bhakti. Bhakti stu bhagavad bhakta sangena parijayate. It's described in the Naradiya Purana. That bhakti comes from a devotee. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's Sankirtanaika Pitaro. He's the father of the Sankirtan movement. He's freely giving Krishna prema. Krishna prema pradayate. He's Krishna prema pradatta. He's giving prema to everyone. But we may ask a question. How did Chaitanya Mahaprabhu get prema? Well, you may say, what a silly question. He already has prema. He's the embodiment of prema. But there's also a pastime of that thing. Because when the Lord comes and he performs his Naralila, he does loka siksha. He acts in such a way to teach the common people. When Krishna comes, he accepts a guru, Sandapani Muni. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he also did like that. He accepted Gangadas Pandit. It's described that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was going every day to the Ganga to take bath. And he was seeing the Vaishnavas there taking bath. So every day while they were taking their bath, Mahaprabhu, he would fold their cloth very nicely and neatly there. And whatever way he could, he would render services to the Vaishnavas. The Vaishnavas, they don't like to be served. And they would come out and say, hey, what are you doing? No, don't do this thing. And Mahaprabhu, he told them. Tumara se para Krishna bhajana di bare dase rase vile Krishna anugraha kore. Mahaprabhu told them. He said that you alone, only you, tomara se para Krishna bhajan divari, you have the ability to give Krishna to others. And by serving his servants, Krishna bestows his mercy. Ye me partha jana partha, na me bhakta sate janaha. Krishna tells Arjuna in the Adi Purana, those persons who say they're my devotees are not really my devotees. But those persons who are devotees of my devotees, they're my real devotee. So Mahaprabhu went on telling him, Toma sabha sevile, se Krishna bhakti pai, eta boli karo paye, gare seitani. Mahaprabhu would tell them, hey, he said, the only way that I can get Krishna bhakti is by serving you. And then Mahaprabhu would catch hold of their feet. And it said that the Vaishnavas, when they were going to the bank of the Ganga, they were seeing Nimai Pandit sometimes. And they were thinking in their heart, oh, if only he could become a devotee. And they were praying, oh Krishna, please, you make Nimai Pandit a devotee. They were praying like that. And Mahaprabhu, he accepted that. Because he knows that by accepting the blessings of the Vaishnavas, everything comes. Krishna Bhakti Janmamula Hoya Sadhu Sangha. What is the birthplace of Krishna Bhakti? The birthplace of Krishna Bhakti is Sadhu Sangha. Krishna Premi Jamateno Puna Mukhya Anga. Even when one's dormant love for Krishna awakens, still association with devotees is absolutely essential. And therefore, Thakur Bhakti Vinod, he's describing in this song, Kanishna Madhyama Uttama Prabedi Vaishnava Tribedi Ghani, that I want to offer proper respect to the Vaishnavas according to their divisions. Prabhupada describes this. He says in a lecture in Mayapur in 1977, a small child can become a Mahabhagavat, and a very learned scholar may become a demon. We must distinguish between different types of devotees. Kanishta Adhikari, Madhyama Adhikari, and Mahabhagavat, Uttama Adhikari. Prabhupada is saying it's very important. We must learn to distinguish between these three types of devotees. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has written one article in the Gaudiya in 1933. From the wicked thought that I am the equal of the Guru and of the true devotees, that they are less than myself, the dreadful offense in the shape of contempt for one's superiors gathers strength. This is real culpable arrogance, as is clear from the text of the Bhagavatam, which says, one who while worshipping Govinda abstains on principle from worshipping his devotees is called arrogant. When the conviction that all Bhagavatas, all devotees are objects of my worship, as much as guided himself dawns upon our souls, we are freed from the clutches of grief, infatuation, and fear. Shoka moha bhayapaha. Those three things go away when we see that thing, when we see the Bhagavatas in this way. He's paraphrasing a verse from the first canto, which is speaking about the Bhagavatam, but also refers to the Vaishnavas. But who is a Vaishnava? How do we see a Vaishnava? Kabhi mui Vaishnavi chini bo hari hari. Thakur Bhakti Vinod is saying that I can't see who's a Vaishnava. Prabhupada writes in the Bhagavatam, 9th canto, chapter 13, text 11, purport, the Supreme Personality of Godhead can be seen or unseen according to his own transcendental desire. Similarly, a devotee, being Jivan Mukta, can be seen or not as he chooses. We're not the seer. We can't tell who is a devotee and who is not a devotee. And therefore, it's described as two things. There's drashta and there's drishta. There's the seer and the seen. If we think that we're the seer, we're always going to make some offense, we're always going to make some mistake. We have to put ourselves in the position of being the seen. And those Vaishnavas reveal themselves to us. Therefore, it's described by Jagadananda Pandit, Vaishnava chinite nai devera shakati. That's a very profound statement. Vaishnava chinite nai devera shakati. Even the demigods don't have the potency to understand, to see who is a Vaishnava. Try to understand. Maybe there's some ant walking around right now in this room. What does that ant understand of us? What does that ant understand about your personal life, about your education in school, about your job at home, about your relationship with your wife or your parents or your teacher? To you, to that ant, you're a mountain. You're just some big blob. He can't even perceive you. To try to compare the relationship, the perception of that ant to us and our perception to the demigods is actually not even a proper analogy, because it's millions of times greater. Our ability to understand and perceive the devatas is much, much less than that of the ant's ability to perceive ourselves. So many of the devatas, such as Agni Dev, he's able to perceive everywhere there's fire. Everywhere there's fire. Varuna perceives everywhere there's water, which means every body. Agni also perceives something in every body, wherever there's fire. Vayu perceives wherever there's air, which is also in every body in every corner of the world. They're so very, very powerful. They can see and understand so many things. Their guru is Brihaspati, Narad Muni. They're learning from such elevated persons. But it said, Vaishnava Chinite Nai Devera Shakati. They don't have the ability to see who is a Vaishnava. Gadadhar Pandit heard from Mukunda Datta that a great Vaishnava had come. So Gadadhar Pandit said, yes, let's go. I want to see Mahabhagavat Vaishnava. Very good. So he took him into someone's home and he said, this is Pundarik Vidyaniti. And Gadadhar Pandit looked. Gadadhar Pandit was a Naishtika Brahmachari. He was a devotee from his birth. And a brahmachari from his birth. He's very simple and very austere. And he saw some fellow sitting there with very expensive colored silk, dhoti, and kurta, vest on. And he's chewing very, very costly pan. And he's spitting that pan out. And he had servants, and the servants would come running. And he was spitting into a gold spittoon, a gold pot. And he had his hair combed back, very long, beautiful hairs. With very nice oil, and he had so many different beautiful rings and jewelry on and things. And his room was full of all different opulence, silken sheets and pillows and silver and gold. And Gadadhar Pandit was thinking, this is a Vaishnava? And Mukunda, he could understand what he was thinking. So then Mukunda began to sing this verse beginning with the Ho Bhakti Swa from the third canto of the Bhagavatam. Oh, how merciful is Krishna that he gave liberation to Baki, the elder sister of Bakasura, Putana. Although she's coming in the form of a nurse, acting as a nurse, but really she wanted to kill Krishna. Still, Krishna is so merciful that he gave her liberation. So when he sang that thing, then Pundarik Vidyaniti became mad. And he started rolling on the ground and crying and tearing his cloth and smearing his hair and breaking all the pots and different things in the room and crying and crying, I'm an offender, I'm an offender. Then Gadadhar Pandit could understand, oh, this is actually a great personality. Similarly, Jed Bharat, who could recognize Jed Bharat? Everybody thought he was an idiot. They thought he was retarded or something. And they said, hey, you go stay out in the field, idiot. They didn't even want to give him, they were trying to give him some education. And he said, this is ka-ka-ga-ga-na-cha-cha. And he's trying to, and he couldn't even write the first letter. And they're getting very impatient with him. Idiot, boka, like this. And you put him out in the field and he can scare the crows away. At least he can do something useful like this. They didn't understand. He's the greatest Mahabhagavat Vaishnava until he revealed himself. So we really don't know. You don't know. And sometimes maybe that great Vaishnava might be a householder, a devotee, a lady, some housewife. It might be a pot washer. Or it might be a guru in our society, a sannyasi, or a brahmachari, or a pujari. We can't see who's an exalted Vaishnava and who's not. So then how do we observe this type of proper respect? It's a very important question. As we've been describing, there's two considerations. There's an external consideration and an internal consideration. By the external consideration, we may offer respect by age. But there's a nice story. I'm going to kind of abbreviate a few things because time is getting a little short. There's so many things to talk about in these subjects. It's described in the Nisringa Purana, excuse me, in the Haribhakti Sutta Dvaya, that on one occasion there was an assembly of sages headed by Markandeya Rishi, who was 7 kulpas old. He was the senior person there. And they were all sitting and having some discussion about Krishna. And then suddenly, this little boy entered that assembly His name was Parashara, and he later became known as Parashara Muni, the father of astrology and the father of Srila Vyasadeva. That little boy was 7 years old. He's a little boy. And he entered into that assembly, and he offered his respect to the sages there. When Markandeya Rishi, who was the chief person in that assembly, saw this little boy, immediately he stood up from his seat, and Markandeya Rishi got down on his hands and knees and offered obeisances to that little boy. And Markandeya Rishi, he became very... If you ever want to do something, I remember once in Los Angeles, two of us were standing, one of the older devotees and myself, we were standing on the sidewalk, and one little boy came walking, a Gurukuli boy, maybe 5 years old. So we both decided to, out of affection, to have some fun with him. So we got down on our hands and knees, and we offered obeisances to him, said, "Oh, Prabhu," like this. And that little boy, he started crying. He became terrified. Oh, why are you doing like this? So Markandeya Rishi, he was offering obeisances as Parashara, and Parashara became like that. "What are you doing? No. You're trying to destroy me? Who are you and who am I? You're 7 kalpas old, I'm 7 years old. This is a very, very bad thing. Huh? Why are you trying to treat me like I'm senior?" So then Markandeya Rishi, he says, "Markandeya taviha san prahamaja tapasvinam ayusho gananam naivam Braksham stachitnu tatvata gavanto hikshana jata harismityaiva dehinam akikrityaiva teneva ganam kayayamayusha." Markandeya Rishi said, "No, I'm behaving properly." He said, "We should understand in terms of siddhanta. There's two considerations, aparavichar, the apparent consideration, and tatvavichar, the absolute consideration. By aparavichar," he said, "by some apparent consideration, I'm senior to Parashara because I'm 7 kalpas old. But in terms of tattva, actually he's superior to all of us." He said, "How should we calculate age?" He said, "Rishis, I speak the truth. Those jivas are born with a physical body. And we can calculate that. And therefore it's described in the Vanashram system Sudhanam neva janmata, that seniority amongst the sudras is determined by age. And we also observe that. We're respectful. We should be respectful of the dadu and different senior persons by their age. But there's another superior consideration to that. And Markandeya Rishi was showing it. He said, "Really, what is one's lifespan? You may say he's a little boy, he's only 7 years old, and I'm 7 kalpas old. But actually, he's older than me." He says, "Because really, we should judge one's lifespan by how long they've been remembering Krishna. And although this boy is only 7 years old, he's remembered Krishna his whole life. And in those 7 years, he's remembered Krishna more than all of us put together. So he's senior to all of us." This is a statement of Hari Bhakti Suradoya, how we should gauge seniority amongst the Vaishnavas. And this thing is seen, you pick up any volume of Srimad Bhagavatam and you open up the cover flap inside, what do you see? A picture of Sukadeva Goswami, who's 15 years old, young boy, didn't even have any clothes on. And he's sitting on the Vyasasana, and who's sitting at his feet? The king of the world, Maharaj Parikshit, who's older than him, and he's the king. And who's next to Maharaj Parikshit? His father, Srila Vyasadeva, is sitting lower than him. And who else is sitting there? His father's guru is sitting there. Narad Muni is also there. And he's sitting on a higher seat because this is Vaishnava etiquette. That Shukadev Goswami, everyone in that assembly agreed, Shukadev Goswami, he's the most elevated person. So he should sit in this way. So this is a very sober thing. We should have some scientific understanding of respect amongst the Vaishnavas. This is a very big subject matter. We'll try to enter into a little bit. In general, we know there's 3 types of Vaishnavas. In his Upadeshamrita, Srila Rupa Goswami gives some description about them. Krishneti yasya giri tvam manasa driheta Dikshesti chet pranadi bishabhajantam hisham. Shru shru sayabhajana vigyamanam yamanya nindari shunyaridam ipsita sanghalabhya. That the Kanishta Adhikari is someone who's chanting Krishna Nam. He says that Krishneti yasya giri tvam manasajayeta. You should give him respect in your mind. He's chanting Krishna Nam. If you don't give him respect, you're being disrespectful to Krishna Nam. You may say, but he has so many faults, he's doing so many bad things, how can I offer him respect? Mantratas tantratas chidam desha kalaharvastita. Sarvam kroti nishchida anasankirtanam diva. He has no fault. It may seem like he has some fault, but the eighth canto of Bhagavatam describes that all those so-called faults are just temporary. And sarvam kroti nishchidam, all that chidra will go far away. Anasankirtanam diva. With the chanting of the holy name. So if they're chanting, we should offer them respect. They may be a Kanishta. We don't want to hear from them. We may not even offer them obeisances, for some social reason, but in our heart, we should respect them. If you don't respect them, then what is your respect to the holy name? That means, we should think about it. There's a nice story. Today is the disappearance day of Gadadhar Das, isn't it?
Yeah, that's funny.
Yeah, so Gadadhar Pandit?
Gadadhar Das.
Yeah, I came a little late for class this morning, so probably you heard this story already in class, I think. I came late and I was thinking. Okay, well, good. We'll tell some story about Gadadhar Das. Gadadhar Das is another different personality from Gadadhar Pandit. And Gadadhar Das was a big preacher. He's one of the first preachers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement. And part of Dukkha Dukhi, he was very compassionate to the fallen persons. He saw this one Muslim, Nawab, Muslim king who was there. And he wanted to go and give some to convince him to chant the holy name. So he went to him and said, "Hey Baba, please, with straw in my teeth, I ask you, please, chant Hare Krishna." And then Nawab became touched. He saw Gadadhar Das. He's very, very sincere. His sincerity touched his heart. He wasn't coming in an arrogant way. He was coming in such a gentle, sweet, affectionate way. So then Nawab said, "Look, Gadadhar Das, I know you're my friend." And he said, "I'd like to fulfill your desire." He said, "But I'll not chant Krishna's name today. Maybe tomorrow I'll chant Krishna, but today we won't do." When Gadadhar Das heard that, he became ecstatic and he started dancing, "Hari Vo, Hari Vo, Hari Vo." He said, "Why tomorrow? Already you've chanted Krishna's name twice today." So Krishnaita yashagiri tvam manasadriyeta. We offer respect to anyone, even a Muslim, if they chant Krishna's name. That includes when you're out there doing Sankirtan and some demon comes, "Ah, you Hare Krishnas, get out of here. Nasty Hare Krishna people." We can be respectful in our mind. Maybe you don't touch his feet. You won't give him any money or worship him. You don't want to hear Hari Katha from him. But he's chanting Krishna Nam. I know one slightly crazy devotee who used to do Sankirtan in America in the parking lots. And he was wearing a hat and Western clothes. And sometimes people, they'd ask him, they'd look at him and say, "Are you a Hare Krishna?" And he would say, he's a little mad person, you don't mind, he'd say, "No, I'm not a Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Hare Ram." Have you ever met a Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare? I knew someone once who became a Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Did you ever meet anyone who was a Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare? So he would go on like that until the person either punched him or walked away because he had some appreciation for the holy name. So I'm not recommending that as a Sankirtan practice. But anyway, he liked to bless people in that way. So we should respect someone who's just chanting Krishna's name. And dikshasti chet pranati bhishya bhajantamisham. That person who has diksha, who has initiation. And not just initiation. It's not just enough. You get a thread or you get your second initiation. Now you want to go tell, "Hey Prabhu, now you should give some respect to me. I'm a second initiated person now." Pachya bhajantamisham. He's actually doing something with that initiation. He's worshipping the deity. That person, dikshesti chat pranati bish, you should offer pranam, You should offer obeisances to that person. Shushushaya, and you should serve. Bhajanam vijnanam anamnanya. That person who's expert in bhajan. Ananyamanya, who's doing bhajan without any deviation. And nindari shunya hirmitsita sangalabhya. That person whose heart is freed from the propensity to criticize others. We shouldn't glorify Vaishnavas, nor should we. We shouldn't criticize them, nor should we glorify them. But we can mention something about one Vaishnava we have some appreciation for, Radhanath Maharaj. If you ever get his association, you do an experiment. You go to him and he's very kind and loving, and you start talking. Try saying something bad about a Vaishnava in front of him. This is an experiment. And see what happens. Maharaj will, either he may get a very bad look on his face, or sometimes he just gets up, excuse me, I have to go, and he'll leave. He just refuses to hear anything bad about anyone. Very wonderful quality. And as we described earlier, Raghunath Das Goswami is the same way. So nindari shunyam hirmitsita sangalabhya. That personality who doesn't criticize others, whose heart is completely freed from the propensity to criticize others, that's the topmost Vaishnava. And that Vaishnava we should serve, we should associate with, and we want to hear from. That's a very, very important thing. I'm looking at the clock. I think we should discuss more of these things tomorrow, these things in depth. But I would like to go on to the beginning of this subject today and speak something about initiation. We may question, how do we know who's a Vaishnava? And as we've already discussed just now, we can't see who a Vaishnava is and who a Vaishnava isn't. We don't have the vision to see that thing. And actually, this is a very, very important point. I'm just glossing over it because we have very little time. But this principle of drashta and drishta is a very, very, very fundamental, important point of who is the seer and who is the seen. If we can give up the abhiman of thinking ourselves to be the seer, then everything will be okay in our bhajan. But always we're thinking, oh, you know, I know who Sadguru is. I've seen Sadguru before. I know who is in advance. I know who is a Paramahansa and who is not. What are we really saying? We should think about it. We're really saying that I am that personality. As we may discuss in the last day, even Yashoda and Rohini, they couldn't recognize Putana. They thought Putana was a devotee. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he says, therefore, that we can't recognize who's a false devotee and who's a real devotee. If even Yashoda and Rohini can't do it, we have to give up the attitude. Our only hope is to give up that attitude and to take shelter of Krishna, to understand that I'm not the seer. This is a fundamental principle. We have to give up this attitude that I'm the seer. So how should we see a Vaishnava then? How can we tell? There's two considerations. There's an external social consideration. There's another consideration of the heart. The external consideration is described in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Diksha kale bhakta kore atma samarpana sei kale krishna tare kore atma samarpana. At the time of initiation, when a devotee fully surrenders under the service of the Lord, diksha kale, the time of initiation, bhakta kori, atma samarpana, when he fully surrenders, sei kale, at that time, krishna tare kore atma sam. Krishna accepts that devotee to be as good as himself. So anyone who has received initiation from guru, we should respect that person in the same way that we would respect Krishna. Dikshasti chet pranati bhishcha bhajantam isham. Because they've gotten this initiation, they've gotten this mantra. They've become, in that sense, non-different from Krishna. He goes on to describe, Sehi deha kori tara Chidananda Maya Prakrita Dehitanra Charanabhajaya. Says that Sei Deha Korita Chidananda Maya. When that devotee's body, by getting initiation like that, his body becomes transformed. It's no longer a material body. Becomes Chid Anandamaya by the chanting of that mantra. Don't take Krishna consciousness in a cheap way. Ultimately, when we speak about respect, if we just have respect for one thing, everything else will come. And that one thing is the holy name. If we can understand the glories of the holy name, if we can understand the glories of the Gayatri Mantra, which is more glorious because the holy name is there. Someone who simply has initiation of that, their body is considered to be transcendental. Aprakrita Dehi, it's not material. Tana Charana Bhajaya. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has commented on this. We translated his translation's purport from Bengali. At the time of initiation, a devotee gives up prakrita anubhutir, the materialistic concept of life. This is speaking about real initiation. So there's two considerations. This doesn't mean that we should walk around with a yardstick and look at people. Oh, he wasn't really initiated, bogus person. I'm not going to offer respect to him. Oh, over here. Yes, yes, he was properly. We have to give up the attitude that we're the seer. But two considerations are there. We should apply this to ourself. What is really initiation? Really initiation, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says, is when the devotee gives up prakriti anubhuti, the materialistic concept of life. That's really initiation. If we haven't done that, we're not really initiated. We have something. Don't give it up. You'll be in worse situation. Continue doing that thing. You should consider you have something. But it's not the same as genuine initiation. He becomes distinguished by aprakrita sambandha gyan. He gets transcendental knowledge. This is a result of getting this mantra. Attaining aprakrita dibya gyan, divine knowledge, he is awarded the qualification to serve Krishna in aprakrit swarup, a spiritual body. He realizes his spiritual body. This is what happens at the time of initiation. The very high thing. When he gives up the shelter of Krishna's illusory energy, Maya, Krishna makes that surrendered devotee atmasata, as good as himself. This self-conception of being the enjoyer of material nature goes away. He becomes situated in the self, and the realization of himself as the eternal servant of Krishna awakens. The devotee realizes his own eternal transcendental blissful form and achieves eligibility to serve Krishna in that form. When this happens, the karmi gun of the materialistic persons criticize that devotee who is situated in his aprakrit body and aprakrit mood of service. They consider that like themselves, the devotee is also performing mundane material activities. By that offense, they are cheated out of getting the mercy of an aprakrit guru. This is a very, very big discussion. Main point we'd like to draw from this, we can discuss this for a long time, there's many high and very subtle, very deep philosophical points, but the main point that we're trying to make from this is that, first of all, applying to ourself, what is really initiation? Should we become proud just because we've gotten the mercy of some Vaishnava, we've gotten that mantra? Srila Prabhupada said that initiation is the beginning. We shouldn't think that we've gone to the end. It's the beginning. And on the other hand, this is an internal consideration, there's an external consideration. If we see someone who's received initiation, and it doesn't matter who their guru is, oh, there is a fall-down guru, there is not a very good guru. His guru, he doesn't know very many shlokas, he's a Western guru. My guru is an Indian guru. He's very, very big and very, very advanced like that. If someone has initiation, then they're as good as Krishna. A civilized person, a cultured person, will understand this philosophical point and they'll offer respect to them. Then according to how they behave, how much knowledge they have, how their behavior is, he may associate intimately or not intimately. But the principle is that anyone who's initiated They're worshipable. They're considered to be non-different from Krishna. And we shouldn't look at them, oh, they have a big guru, they have a small guru. We shouldn't look at them and think, oh, was their initiation real initiation or not real initiation? We should think, they have initiation. I'm not the seer. I don't know if it's real or not real. I'm not the seer. I should be respectful to that thing. So many points are there, and I'm doing some operette because Maharaj gave me some instruction yesterday, and I surpassed it. We've gone over time. We wanted to stop a little early. We didn't even touch on any of these subjects today. I'm sorry. We got a little distracted with Prabhu's answer there. So, Maharaj, do you want to add anything? Any comments?
Where was your initiation?
This is from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Ancha Lila, Chapter 4. Texts 192 and 193, and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's purport to it. Chapter 4. We're actually, this is something we took from an article which we haven't published yet. We're writing called All Devotees Are Prabhus, which is appropriate for this seminar also. And there's other pramanas, if we ever publish that article, from Hari Bhakti Vilas also, describing that someone just gets initiation, and that person, I don't have the pramana with me, but that person, he's worshipped even by Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva is the most worshipful. He's the boss. Everybody worships Lord Shiva. He's Vaishnavanamita Shambhu. He's the boss of all the Vaishnavas, but he's also the leader of this material world. And in some ways, he's the creator of this world. In some ways, he's a destroyer on behalf of Krishna. But he's the office manager. Krishna's the owner of the office, but he's the office manager. And even Lord Shiva, he offers respect to someone who has initiation. So we should do like that. This is a cultured thing to do. Culture of respect. Is there anything else, Maharaj? But how does that knowing come? That knowing comes by the mercy of Krishna and the Vaishnavas. It's not by some intellectual exercise, or especially it's not by thinking ourselves to be the seer. This concept is referred to, we've heard this from our spiritual master. He spoke a lot about this. But also, it's a concept we found quite often in the writings and lectures of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. I think he may have gotten it from there. He gives a very wonderful example of it. He says that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was going to have darshan of Lord Jagannath, what was he doing? And he says this pastime illustrates the principle of what is really darshan. What is this principle of darshan? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he would go to have darshan of Lord Jagannath, the first time he went, what happened? He saw Lord Jagannath and he became mad and started running to go on the altar. And then he fell unconscious. From that time on, he never went close to Lord Jagannath. For some external reasons and internal reasons. Externally because he wanted to give some instruction to the common people. And internally because he was afraid if he would go closer, he would embrace the Lord or he might do something he might consider an offense. So for Loka Siksha, where did he stand? He stood next to Garuda. And for those Videshis like myself who are unfortunate, we can't go inside the Jagannath Mandir, we can't see that in that Garuda Stambha, there's three fingerprints of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, where he melted the Stambha. Just like if you have the good fortune to have darshan of Gopishwar Mahadev, when he's, if you excuse the expression, when he's naked, when he doesn't have anything on him, you may see there's some fingerprints on him. And those are said to be from the gopis. When the separation from Krishna, they were crying and holding on to Gopishwar Mahadev. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was having darshan of Lord Jagannath, he became so ecstatic, he melted his three fingertips into that Garuda Stambha, and he also melted the stone underneath his feet. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says there's a reason why he was standing next to Garuda. To illustrate this point that we're not the seers, but rather we should be the seen. He said that darshan doesn't mean that we're going to see the Lord. Oh, he looks very nice today. I like this outfit. Oh, that outfit the other day, it wasn't a good outfit, but this outfit today, this is very, very nice. This is very good. I approve. I give my approval. Krishna doesn't need our approval. And we're not the seer. We go there, what are we seeing? We're just seeing some stone. We're seeing all the pujari dressed very nicely today. Krishna is the seer. Darshan means that Krishna is seeing us. We're showing up for Artik. Artik has started and Krishna's looking. Where's Pradosh? Oh, he's sleeping still. Where's Madhavananda? Oh, he's just in the mode of ignorance. He's not coming. Why didn't they come? My darshan. That's darshan. And Mahaprabhu is teaching us that we're not the seer. Rather, we should be the seen. Therefore, he's standing next to Garuda. Because Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said that Mahaprabhu was thinking that, who am I? In his Dainya Bhava, his mood of humility, Lord Jagannath will never look at me. But if I stand next to Garuda, Garuda is such a dear devotee of Lord Jagannath that definitely Lord Jagannath, he's going to look at Garuda. And when he looks at Garuda, maybe he'll see me also. So this is a system. When we go in the temples in Orissa, we always like to go behind the Garuda Stambha and have our darshan there, following Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Okay, Marsha. Is there anything else? Prabhuji?
I don't. You now explain seer and to be seen. I understand some points of it, but on the one hand, we should differentiate who is Kanishka Mahadeva and Tamadikari, not on the external point of view, this means on the apparent way they have been.
Very good question.
But I'm asking now, what can I do? Because you answer to. You now also again wrote, now we should look, is he initiated, is he not initiated? Right.
I have to keep repeating this point. I have to keep going back a little bit to emphasize this point. There's two considerations. One is an internal consideration. The other is an external consideration. Yesterday, for example, we spoke about the institution from an internal consideration. And we said about it, in one sense, it's hypothetical. It's like an allegory. It was the word we used yesterday. That it's not actually a real thing because institutions comprise of individuals. But in another sense, it is a real thing by another consideration. And we may speak something more about that in a day or two. But we should always keep these two considerations. Internally, the internal consideration is that we want spirit and that we should see ourselves. What is my qualification? What is my level of advancement? I'm very fallen. We should see like that. And we should look for guru. We should look for guru. Guru is that person. Tasmad gurum papadyate jidnasu sreni uttamam. Shabde parichanishnatam. Brahmanipasamashram. Who's situated on the platform of Brahman. He's a realized person. You can't see that. You don't know who that person is. But don't take initiation from someone unless you're convinced that that person's on that platform. Unless you're convinced of that, this is something I was hoping to speak about more tomorrow, is the relationship of guru and disciple and the etiquette with guru. Guru is that person that we have implicit faith in. So if you don't have implicit faith in that person, don't take initiation. Don't waste his time. Don't waste your time. You should have absolute faith in that person. And when you meet someone you feel strong in your heart, Krishna speaks to you in your heart, this person is that self-realized person, then you can take initiation. But how can you see that? That's your question. How can we understand who's a Vaishnava, who's guru? We're not the seer. We have to depend on Krishna. And Krishna, he'll speak in our heart. But there's also, that's an internal consideration. But there's also an external consideration, a social consideration. If someone has a position of sannyasi, if someone has a position of guru, we offer respect to them. We should do that. It's good for us. It's good for the society. We don't know what their level of realization is. Shukracharya, he was being offered respect by Bali Maharaj, but actually he was a rascal. He was telling Shukracharya, he's telling Bali Maharaj, don't worship Krishna, don't give in charity to this Vamanadeva. But still respect is being given to him because he has that post. So there's an external thing and an internal thing. Externally, we should offer respect to anyone who's chanting Hare Krishna. Any devotee. We should offer respect, Naramatrena Maryada, to anyone who's a human being. But more so to someone who's initiated. More so to someone who's chanting Hare Krishna, and more so to someone who's initiated. And more so to someone who's taking the position of guru. We don't know if they're qualified or not qualified. It's such a nonsense, rascal, bloodmass, terrible thing. People have this attitude that they're the seer. And they're coming and they're saying stupid, ridiculous things like, there's no bona fide gurus in ISKCON. I had a few years ago, I try to be a gentle person. We're giving a seminar. I try to behave according to what we're saying. We're not just trying to say this, really. We try to act this way. But some things are too much for us. A few years ago, I met a senior Vaishnava in Los Angeles who started telling me this thing. He's on the street right in front of the temple. He's a very senior Vaishnava. And he started telling me, there's no bona fide gurus in ISKCON. They're all bogus. And we have some social relationship, the external consideration, I want to be respectful to him, he's a proper disciple and a senior Vaishnava. But at the same time, I couldn't control myself, it was very painful for me. And so I told him, no, I'm sorry, but I don't agree with that. I know at least one person in this society who is qualified. And he said, yeah, who? And I said, you. And then that person, he's a very intelligent person, actually became a little cautious, and he thought, oh, he's going to use some tricky words or something here like that. He said, what do you mean by that? I said, well, if you can say that there's no one qualified, then you must be qualified, because you have the vision to see there's absolutely nobody qualified, so there at least must be one person who's qualified. That must be you. Right? That's a logical, reasonable thing. So next time someone comes and tries to tell you there's no bona fide gurus in ISKCON, you say, oh, Dandavat Pranams. You must be a Mahabhagavat Vaishnava. You can see and ascertain that thing. You can ascertain something even Yashoda Mohini couldn't see. Even Yashoda Mohini, they couldn't see who Putana was. But you're more powerful than Mother Yashoda and Mother Rohini. You're very Uttam Uttam Vaishnava. It's a very, very terrible thing. It's a terrible thing because it hurts our society. It hurts the Vaishnavas. So two considerations are there. Ultimately, both considerations are spiritual because they help us in our bhajan. But one is an external material consideration, we may say, a society consideration. If someone's chanting Hare Krishna in the society, be respectful to them. And philosophically, we can do that because we understand the power and glory of Krishna's name. And if we see someone's initiated, we should offer more respect to that person. That's a social consideration, but there's a philosophical, spiritual reason behind it. Now, we don't know, because we're not the seer, if that person's there on a very high level or not. So that's a spiritual consideration. And we should apply that thing first to ourself. We can't see others. We shouldn't criticize others. Adosha darshi. Don't see others' faults. Don't see anyone's faults. If we do that thing, we'll make very good advancement. But what do we do when we go to serve the Vaishnavas? What do we do when we go to look for Guru? Krishna is going to speak in your heart and he's going to whisper, he's going to say, hey, this person, he's very special. He's more advanced than you. And naturally you should serve that person. That's a consideration of the heart. And that can't be dictated. As we described a few days ago, sometimes in the early days of our society, the leaders, with respect to them, they tried to dictate this. That you have to have spiritual faith. You have to have absolute faith in them just because they're a leader. But that's not fair. It's too much to demand. It's too much to expect from someone. And if we demand that kind of respect, the society won't run properly. And people will lose faith. Because we demanded that respect, now the opposite the swing of the pendulum is that people's rejecting all the authorities. As we described that first day, we should be somewhere in the middle. We should be wise. We should respect the authorities. But we have to listen to our heart. We have to cry to Krishna. We have to depend on Krishna to show us who is Guru, who is an advanced Vaishnava. And then according to our heart, we have to offer more respect to that more advanced Vaishnava than to the less advanced Vaishnava. And Krishna, he'll appreciate that. Is that okay? It's also a long answer. I'm sorry. That's a very nice question, Prabhuji. I'm really happy. Somehow, there's three things we were describing this last night in the Gita class. We want to have a happening. Just like I think in the early days, the hippie days in America, they had these festivals. They called them a happening. And all the hippies, they would come together and they would take LSD and all these drugs. And they'd play rock and roll music. And it was called a happening or being. You know, something was happening then. So Srimad Bhagavatam class, or Hari Katha, is a happening. There's something going on which is called Krishna Katha. And there's certain elements in that thing. There's three elements. One is that Krishna is present. Krishna Tulya Bhagavata Vibhu Sarva Shroy. This is Krishna's Vibhu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So also his Katha is also Vibhu. He's present in that Katha. And there's also a speaker, and there's also a listener. These are the three elements of this being, of this happening. called Hari Katha. So all three have to be qualified. You have to really speak on the Bhagavatam. If you speak from the Sunday Times or the New York Herald or something like that. You speak from the newspaper. That's not Harikatha. We should quote Srimad Bhagavatam. We should quote Shastra. Speak from that. Krishna is present. And the speaker should be there. The speaker should be qualified. He has to be... He has to be Niradvakta, Jiva Goswami says in Bhakti Sandarbha. His qualification is he has no material desires. You don't want to hear from the Saradvakta, speaker with material desires, like myself. That person, his words, they're temporary and they don't penetrate the heart. And there's a third personality, a third element to that being, that happening, and that's the listener. And we may ask a question. I like this answer, this question very much. We were speaking with Maharaj about this yesterday. Who is more important? Which is more important in this being, the speaker or the audience? Who can tell us? You can't say. Not Maharaj Pradosh. Who, Prabhuji?
The audience.
The audience. Very good. Did you hear this from us before? You know, he's a knowledgeable person. So Prabhuji knows. The speaker may be very, very qualified. The most qualified speaker. Srila Prabhupada once went to France. I heard this story in Prabhupada Lilamrita. You may know more about it. You're from France, I think. And Prabhupada was sitting down to give a lecture. And he started to speak, and there's a whole bunch of rowdy students, and they became angry. Why are you sitting on a Vyasasana? They started shouting and throwing things and making a big disturbance. And Prabhupada stopped the lecture and told the devotees, you do kirtan. So it's such a qualified speaker, but the audience was very unqualified. So nothing came out, even though they had the good fortune of being there with Srila Prabhupada. So even if the speaker is very qualified, if the audience is not qualified, nothing will come out. But on the other hand, if the audience is very, very eager to hear something, and the speaker may be not very qualified, then something very nice will come out still, because Krishna, he'll inspire that speaker. Because Krishna's in the heart of all the listeners, he knows they're very eager. So Krishna, he'll inspire the speaker. So everyone is doing a service. The speaker is doing a service to Guru and Krishna by speaking and by repeating what he's heard from Bhagavatam and Shastra. And the listeners are doing service by being very eager and by being respectful. And if that atmosphere is created, then there's a being, there's a happening called Krishna Katha. So anyway, it's very good, even though the speaker in this assembly is not qualified, because all of you are very qualified, some little things are coming out. So please forgive us if we have any offenses or anything. Samaveda Bhakta Binda Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Ko Premanandi Hari Hari. So did anyone go to prasadam yesterday? Was there still prasadam when you went to my... Okay, good. Because I'm going to go to prasadam today. So... These things, I would also like to encourage everybody. It's not that I'm the